Good afternoon, Bay Area. Welcome to the Sights and Sounds Show with me, Janae Darden, where every week we tap into the Bay Area art scene and bring you rich conversations with artists. On today's show, the principal trumpet player of the San Francisco Symphony, Mark Inoue, has an exciting show coming up. Then a throwback interview with poet James Cagney, and harpist Destiny Muhammad talks about her latest album. Today's show, we're talking about harps, horns, and hope. That's all coming up. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Sights and Sounds Show with me, Janae Darden. That song you hear is by musician Mark Inoue. Mark doesn't just deliver on the jazz stage, but in the orchestra too. Mark is principal trumpet for the San Francisco Symphony, and he's been part of the symphony since 1999. You can see him in the concert tomorrow and the rest of the weekend for the show Beethoven 5 and Sung Jin Cho. And joining me is Mr. Mark Inoue. Welcome, Mark.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. Pleasure to be here.
Yeah, I'm so happy you're here. I saw you smiling listening to your music. We surprised you.
I haven't heard that tune in a long time, actually.
You were like, what? I have to ask you, I think you're the first trumpet player we've interviewed, or at least like kind of featured. So what drew you to the trumpet? I know, huh? So what drew you to the trumpet?
You know, I've always loved music, and I had two older brothers, and my oldest brother, was in the junior high band. And I remember we were dragged to go to his winter and spring concerts. But I remember feeling the excitement of live music. Even as a kid going to a junior high band concert,
wow.
I thought, dang, that would be very cool. And two instruments I was sort of immediately drawn to was the percussion and the trumpet.
Okay.
But, trumpet play melodies. And that's what I did. I started playing trumpet. It's the only instrument I ever really played. And I love it.
I can see it, and I can definitely hear when I listen to your music. And I thought it was interesting that when you were in college, you were at UC Davis and was studying engineering, I think, and then you transferred to Juilliard to study music.
Yeah.
That was bold. That's crazy.
Yeah. Well, you know, I wanted to be a baseball player. I wanted to play center field for the Giants, actually. I was a Giants fan growing up in Davis. And when I went to college, I was a civil engineer at UC Davis for 2 years. And then, to make a long story short, I transferred, auditioned, and got into music conservatory, transferred. I'm here with you.
So, and now you're here with me. Were you, because I know you're athletic, were you playing baseball like when you were younger or playing baseball in college?
Yeah, I played baseball, a little basketball, but I played baseball all throughout junior high, high school. I even wrestled 1 year because the wrestling coach needed someone in the certain weight class that he had no one, and I happened to be that weight. So he's like, look, all you have to do is not get pinned, and that's a win for our team. So I have to say, the very first wrestling match that I was in, I won, and I didn't even know half of the moves or rules or point scoring system. And then after that, it was all downhill. And then I had to leave the team because there was other things I had to do. So that career was short.
So that's why we don't see you on the WWE. We see you in the San Francisco Symphony.
That's true. Although the Symphony does have a softball team.
Okay.
Which I will say is undefeated, internationally undefeated.
Oh, wow. Okay. I did not know that. Well, I learned something new. I didn't know you guys had like international teams. So you play against other orchestras, like other symphonies?
Well, basically when we go on tour, or when we used to go on tour, if we had a day off in a city like New York or Boston, we would contact the New York Philharmonic or the Metropolitan Opera Orchestra or the Boston Symphony, and we would try to convince them to come and play a game, a softball game.
Oh, wow.
Yes, we have never lost And we played one international tour we did. We had a day off in Tokyo. So we contacted the Tokyo Philharmonic and played a softball game, and we beat them. So that's why we are internationally undefeated to this day.
Behind the scenes of the San Francisco Symphony. Okay,
you're not going to find that in the program.
This is exclusive, you guys. It's exclusive on the Sights and Sounds show with Janae Darden. So let's get back to music. Play both jazz and classical. For you, how does one inform the other, or how does one help you as an artist?
Well, of course, I play classical music with the San Francisco Symphony every day, every week, every year. And I used to play in clubs sporadically, less now. But I would say jazz absolutely helps and informs my classical playing, because jazz, you have to play with so much character mm-hmm. and personality and style. Even if you play a wrong note or mess up, it's all about the attitude, the character. And when I play classical music, I honestly try to have that approach. Try to play with maximum character. Even if someone might disagree with it, at least they have something with which to disagree with, as opposed to maybe playing just sort of stale and bland and playing it safe.
So when you're playing, and I'm thinking character, because when I see jazz musicians, you know, they're not really stoic, right? They're kind of moving. And so are you doing that when you're playing classical music? So you're moving a little bit, and maybe we can hear that character in the sound that you're emitting?
That's what I'm going for.
Okay.
Yes. I would love for you to be able to feel the groove, the swing, the feel. If your eyes are closed.
Okay. Nice. So is this the 20th anniversary of your album, The Trumpet and the Bull? I think that's about like 20 years. I'm a journalist.
That's crazy. I'm a journalist. About that. You totally shocked me when you started playing that track in the album. I thought, wait a minute, I know this tune.
I listened to the album. It's a great album. I was listening to it online. And I guess about 20 years. That's what the date.
Damn, 20-year anniversary. That's crazy. You know, I originally just wanted to make a clean recording of original compositions of mine.
Mm.
And then one of my friends just said, well, why don't you just make an album? It's the same thing, really.
Yeah.
So that's how that all came about. So yeah, that album is all original compositions that I wrote.
Nice. Okay, why is it called The Trumpet and the... Oh, I love how you just did your lips. This such a trumpet player.
Yeah.
He just blew his lips.
You can do that too.
No, not like you. I can't do it like you. So the
trumpet... But this is on the radio, right? So no one's going to see this.
But I heard it. We can hear it. Okay, so The Trumpet and the... Where does the title come from?
You know, that was written a long time ago. A lot of times, you got to deal with a lot of pull.
Okay.
Sometimes.
Okay.
You know, and that album was just some observations and reflections and reactions and you know, things that were going on.
I hear. Well, we want to play a clip because I want folks to hear how you get down when it comes to jazz. So this is the song, Find the Cheese. And I'm lactose intolerant, but I'm going to play this song. It's called Find the Cheese. But it's...
I have to write another tune just for you.
Find the cashew cheese. That'll be for the next album. But no, let's hear Find the Cheese. Let's hear a minute of that. All right, that was from Mark's album, The Trumpet and the Bull. Mark, you've been in the San Francisco Symphony for a long time.
It seems like it.
Yeah. Did you think?
In 1999.
That's longer than a lot of relationships. That's longer than a lot of people stay in jobs. Did you think you would be here this long?
Well, the San Francisco Symphony is one of the best orchestras in the world. And it's what we kind of call a lifer orchestra. You get in the band, you're not going anywhere. You know, it's one of the best. It's one of the best orchestras. So I never thought, though, I would win a job with San Francisco just because I'm from Davis. And this is literally my hometown orchestra. You know, when I was a student and auditioning around the country, all I wanted was to try to win a job in a city that had a baseball team. Mm-hmm. So then when the Giants came to town, I could go watch them. That was really what but never did I ever think I would win a job with San Francisco Symphony. So, yeah.
I love that.
Bring them true.
Yeah. I love that how you're athletic too as well. So like sports and music, you know, are important in your life.
Oh, the disciplines are quite similar, professional sports and professional musician.
Surfing, you still surfing, you still running marathon.
Yeah, usually one or the other. I'm usually training for one marathon a year. And then when I'm not training for the marathon, I don't do anything.
That must be good for you as a trumpet player, because I'm thinking just having to, you know, all the breathing that's involved.
Actually, absolutely. I first started running, I thought, oh, that could help my breathing and my breath control.
Right.
Absolutely. 100%. And I still try to work out all the time just to be in, you know, good shape, obviously for good health. But it does help when you play a wind instrument, when you play a brass instrument. Mm-hmm. And you need to use your own air. And, you know, it's interesting, for every instrument, in order to make a sound, something must vibrate, right? I mean, for a violin or a string instrument, I mean, it's the string that vibrates.
Yeah.
You know, for a reed, clarinet, saxophone, oboe, bassoon, it's the reed that vibrates, right? The percussion, they hit the drum head or the cymbal, that's what vibrates. But for brass musicians, it's our own flesh.
Mm-hmm.
It's our own body that has to vibrate. And if you injure that, you're in trouble. You know, you break a string, you get a new string.
Right.
You know, you break a reed, you get a new reed, right? And you injure your chop.
You get in a fight and get a busted lip, then you're in trouble.
You got to take care of it so that, and it's a muscle like anything else in your body. So I working out and running also, I think just in that sort of bigger picture, good health.
Yeah.
I try to adhere to, so.
If you're just tuning in, I'm speaking with Mark Inoue. He is the principal trumpet player in the San Francisco Symphony. His upcoming concert is Beethoven 5 and Sung Jin Cho. He'll be performing a concerto with pianist Sung Jin Cho. And those shows are running tomorrow, January 22nd, through the weekend. So Sung Jin Cho is a renowned classical pianist from Korea, and he's performed at prestigious symphonies around Europe, Asia, and here in the U.S., including the San Francisco Symphony. And you both will be performing the piano concerto number 1 by the late Russian composer Dmitri Shostakovich. Shostakovich. Thank you so much.
Shostakovich.
Yeah. Please correct me. Thank you so much. Okay.
No. You're good. You're good.
Okay. So tell. I'm lucky to say all these beautiful names from different places. So tell us more about Sung Jin Cho.
Well, he is phenomenal. He's a young lion, just an amazing pianist. And just to clarify, the second half of the program is Beethoven's Fifth Symphony, which is, you know, very popular.
Right.
You know, this. And on the first half is the Shostakovich Piano Concerto, of which Sung Jin is the piano soloist. And this concerto is very interesting because it's orchestrated, it's solo piano, strings, no woodwinds, no percussion, no brass, except for one lone trumpet.
Yes.
And it's sort of an odd orchestration.
Yeah, I listened when to it.
Yeah, and when Shostakovich first started composing this piece, he initially thought, oh, I'll write a trumpet concerto. So we had the trumpet and the strings. But then he thought, I'll change it maybe to a double concerto and added piano. But then the piano part started taking over, and he thought, okay, I'll change it to a piano concerto with a solo trumpet as well. So half of the piece, the trumpet doesn't play because he never finished writing it for as a trumpet concerto. Oh, so it's a little quirky in this sense.
It is, and it takes you all kind of places. Because I listened to it, it goes all, you know, all different types of places, like emotionally when you're listening and in their imagination. I want to play a clip because I want people to get an idea of just what this sounds like, because I'm just imagining you and Sung Jin Cho playing. And I'm thinking too, just the type of vibe that you both have. So I was like, I know that's going to be a really cool performance. So let's hear a snippet of Piano Concerto Number 1. And this clip is from a 2024 concert with Sung Jin Cho at the Philharmonie in Luxembourg. Of that song, Piano Concerto Number 1. Yeah, it's really a fun piece. And we have we're a little bit over time, Mark, but we do have a minute left. Anything else you want to say or add for people to expect, or just anything you want to say about the upcoming show?
Shostakovich, Beethoven, two of my favorite composers. It's great classical music. That really, you know, like just that little snippet you played, if you close your eyes, there's a lot of emotion, energy, frenetic energy, yeah. You know, just in that little clip. And part of that, the piano doesn't play, it's just the strings, and the trumpet doesn't play. So it really has a balance of all the trumpet, piano, orchestra. And I would just say, you know, if you come to any of the concerts this week, come to the front of the stage, say hello. Say hello to the trumpet and piano player.
Amen.
And we'd love to see you. It's great. It's great music. It's like playoff baseball. It's excitement, you know, with all stars on the stage playing in the whole band. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm sure you sold a lot of folks. And of course, because the San Francisco Symphony is great. Mark, thank you so much. I'm so glad I got to talk to you today.
Thank you so much for having me. And please let me know if you want to come or you come to a show. Let me know. We'll hook you up.
Absolutely. We'll talk. All right. That is Mark Inoue. He's the principal trumpet for the San Francisco Symphony. And you can see him perform in the concert, Beethoven 5 and Sung Jin Cho. Shows begin tomorrow, Thursday, and run all weekend. Also stream his album, The Trumpet and the Bull. And coming up, a poet whose words have been healing for him and his readers. Stay with us. You're listening to the Sights and Sounds Show with me, Janae Darden. Tomorrow, Thursday night, I'll be interviewing award-winning poet James Cagney at Books, Inc. in Alameda. His latest book is Ghetto Koans, a personal archive. A koan is a Japanese word for a paradox or riddle that can't be solved. Koans are used to train Zen Buddhists to release dependence on reason and gain spiritual enlightenment. But how does that tie into the ghetto? Well, you have to join us tomorrow to find out that answer. In light of our upcoming discussion at Books, Inc., here's a 2019 interview I did with James about his first book, Black Steel Magnolias and the Hour of Chaos Theory. He writes about finding out he was adopted at age 19, then losing his parents, who raised him a few years later. I spoke with James Cagney at his East Oakland home. So I'm reading your poem, Identity to Burn. You open your book pretty much telling people who you are. And there is a line in your book, you talk about identity. Born in 1968, mm-hmm. reborn in 1999. For people who don't know you, what does that mean?
What that means is that the life that I had between 68 to 99 had completely burned down. The parents that I had that raised me at that point had both died. I was raised as an only child and had no other real family outside of just the two of them. And I ended up losing the house that I'd grown up in thanks to the Loma Prieta earthquake and a loan that my mom got from the city of Oakland to sort of rebuild it because the foundation had been sort of broken by that quake. So I lost my house, my sense of self, and basically my identity, because the biological family that I then went to go reconnect with after 1999 kind of didn't care, kind of wasn't that interested in what my personal life was before that point. You know, so it's sort of like to them, it was like, I guess my past and memory only really mattered to me. And so that rebirth was about the idea that everything and anything that I identified myself with was gone. And I was recognizing that I was just going to have to become more present-minded and just move forward from that perspective. Really being able to write this out of my system was like the only choice that I had.
So what does the title mean? Because just that Black Steel Magnolias in the Hour of Chaos Theory, that's just like, right there, the reader's like, okay, he's about to hit us with some really hard stuff. He's about to get deep. That's what I thought when I saw the title alone.
Yeah, that title's a lot. That title is me. So this is called Negro Geist. One, Daddy. Old Crow and Jack Daniels understood my father mouthfuls at a time. Jim Bean and Old Forrester were uncles in hard glass suits. They'd roll up in the knuckle crack and sigh of Hennessy taking its first breath, then hound dog laughter and dominoes falling in hail on the graveyard of the dining room table. Relatives who existed only through stories and memory would ease in like zombies on ropes of Blue Marlboro and Newport and Camel Smoke, then demand a seance in spades, coon can, and Texas Hold'em. No wonder they called it spirits. Spirits baited my father with Cavassier. That title is comprised of two completely different things from, you know, these two weird different sources compressed into one. And I feel like that ultimately is me in the way that I...
And what are the two different sources?
It is a reference to Public Enemy, Black Steel in the Hour of Chaos. Public Enemy also, I guess I am forced here to mention, being maybe the fourth or fifth movie that the actor James Cagney was in, that he was famous for. And as well, it references Steel Magnolias, this really cheesy movie starring, you know, every famous white woman that there were in that period when that movie was released.
Shout out to Julia Roberts.
And shout out to Dolly Parton, who I'm imagining DJing for Chuck D and Public Enemy in the poster of my head when you look at that title.
And it's interesting because Public Enemy, they're very direct and about telling what's going on in society and in the world. And then you have Steel Magnolias, which is a movie that had tragedy in it, too, as well. And so that also, too, reflects your story.
That title by itself is a poem to me.
You also, in this book, a lot of it is about loneliness, a lot of it is about hardship, but it's also, too, a lot of it is about love for your mother, the one who adopted you. Can you talk about her? And I'm looking around your apartment, and I see elements of her. Like you said, there's a blanket here that was similar to the one that was on her hospital bed when she was ill. And you talked about she likes plants. Your mother taught you about plants, and like there's plants all over. So I feel like there's elements of her here.
You know, it's weird. It's hard to contextualize my mother and speak about her intellectually in this context, in this way, because in a lot of ways, I feel like all that I really could say is truly represented in the poems itself. I feel like she taught me a lot. I feel like she was much more hands-on with me as opposed to my dad. He, to me, was very distant towards me and was not just kind of like a hands-on, active father figure for me.
And it's amazing because she adopted you because your birth mother was her student, right?
Correct. So the story, as I had been told, is that my biological mom, by the time that I was about to be born, had already had six kids and was just kind of like struggling financially. She had started to go to school. I don't know how long it was that she was studying to be a beautician or whatever's like that, but she had basically gone back to school and met the mom that would ultimately raise me, as who was her supervisor and teacher in that beauty college.
Was it hard to reveal so much personal information about yourself and put it in this book?
I am not a brother who sort of identifies himself artistically through feeling shame as far as what I am scared to say on stage or not. You know, these poems to me are sort of like prayers to help me release both the tension and frustration that I have with certain elements in my life and the confusion that I have with certain elements in my life, and just, it's just kind of like writing myself free, you know, just writing myself loose from the things that it's just hard to go and grab somebody and say, I need a witness for what has just occurred. There's not always going to be an available witness to you. In a lot of ways, you're going to have to witness yourself. And the only way truly to clearly be able to see yourself is to represent through some sort of like art, some sort of like action, some sort of like movement.
That was my 2019 interview with Oakland poet James Cagney. It originally aired on the KLW show Cross Currents. I'll be in discussion with James tomorrow night, 7 p.m. at Books, Inc. in Alameda, and we'll be talking about his latest book, Ghetto Koans, A Personal Archive. And you can visit klw.org/events for more information. And coming up, we go from Ghetto Koans to the Harpist from the Hood. Destiny Muhammad is here. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Sights and Sounds Show with Janae Darden. My next guest is someone whose music I play when I'm stressed out, when I'm praying, when I need to be still, and when I want to bob my head and tap my feet. Destiny Muhammad is a harpist and composer whose songs touch hearts in the Bay Area and beyond. She plays at community events, jazz festivals, Grace Cathedral. She's everywhere. And her latest album is the Destiny Muhammad Trio, Volume 2. And that song you're hearing is from that album. And I'm so excited that she is right here with me in studio. Destiny Muhammad, hey!
How are you today?
I am good, because you're here.
Good. Gratitude Day.
Gratitude Day. Mark was great. We're having a good show. We're having a good time today.
Sounded.
Yes. I love how you both, you heard your music, and you guys are like, you guys are so happy to hear your music. The last time I interviewed you in this studio was in 2019.
Whoa.
It was 2019. I know. And I love your story about how you were watching the episode of I Love Lucy when you were a little girl, and Harpo Marx was playing a harp, and you were like, I want to do that. That's a beautiful story.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
That is still the reason.
Yeah. And like I said in the intro, I said, you're everywhere. Looking back to that time, like, do you ever look back and just think, wow?
Yes, I look at a 9-year-old Destiny and I say, girl, look what we doing.
Yeah, I imagine so. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, like the fellowships you have, the grants, the stages that you've been on, the people you performed with. You know, and your fans, we know you as Harpist from the Hood.
That's right.
The Harpist from the Hood. Yes. And I read an article where you called yourself the Sound Sculptress.
Yes.
Okay, I didn't know about that. What's that?
So Sound Sculptress, I use the medium of sound to sculpt an environment of a peace and harmony for the listener.
Yes.
So I have this opportunity where it's not like I'm two-sided. but I can sculpt in a quiet, beautiful setting to create a restorative process for groups of people, whether it's a sound bath or meditation or, you know, life passages. Sometimes I'm invited to play for, you know, funerals and life celebrations. And so being able to set the tone with the music that way as well. Then, you know, you get the funky stuff where I get to hit the jazz festivals.
You can throw down on that harp.
Oh, yes. Well, now.
And people don't really think about the harp as that type of instrument, but you do the jazz, you can do some hip hop.
But girl, truth.
And I've been to where you play during retreats, and it's just really, it's almost heavenly.
Well, see, that's the sound sculptress.
Yeah.
That's the sound sculptress.
Yes. Okay, well, I'm glad I've experienced that. And, you know, your music is medicine for me, you know, and so many other people. And, again, you perform in all types of places, as you just named. And in these times, how are people reacting to your music? Are you noticing they're reacting to your music differently than maybe when I saw you in 2019? How are people experiencing Destiny Muhammad in this age?
I feel like, especially with the current climate as it is, and sometimes it can feel very volatile, is that the response is even more heightened. Folks are even more so saying, you were just what I needed right now, whether it's happening in their personal environment or them just responding globally to what's happening. Folks are saying, it's just what I needed. I feel like I can move forward. I feel like I can make some intuitive, conscious decisions that will help me and my immediate environment.
Wow. How does that feel, you know, being the sound sculptress, that you are able to offer that gift to people?
It's empowering, and it's also very humbling, too, because I don't take the gift lightly. Unlike some of my contemporaries, I got my gift. My gift came full bloom at 30, and some of my contemporaries had gotten theirs younger, and so I'm older, and knowing that my responsibility is different.
Yeah,
I have to... Or maybe I don't say, I get to steward the gift in a way that will bless an environment.
Yeah. I feel that because I'm in my 40s, and this is my first one-hour show on a radio, you know, station. I mean, I've done, like, reporting and like my other show was like 6 minutes, so it was an art segment, and I love that show and people love that show, but I feel like I do feel a different responsibility being in my 40s hosting a one-hour show. So and then just being, you know, even more mature to do something like this.
Your conversation is different.
Yes,
you've seen some things and experienced some things, and you have survived some things, so your whole experience coming from within yourself is all today the different than when you were in your 20s.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, this show would be very much different if I was in my 20s. That saying would be good, but it definitely would be different. It definitely would be different. You know, I'm thinking, too, I know you have some merch, and you put this on your social media, that hood, and you're the harpist from the hood, that hood, H-O-O-D, stands for honoring our own divinity.
Yes.
How are you, Destiny Muhammad? Because you honor our divinity with your music, but how are you honoring your divinity during this era when we see so much dehumanization?
Oh, by staying completely 10 toes down in my own divinity, by recognizing that my relationship with the infinite is personal. And as much as I may move through different religious and spiritual segments and being able to embody and embrace the textbooks that are attached to them, is that my relationship with the infinite is very personal, whether I'm speaking to the guide of my understanding or ancestral, that divinity is very personal to me. How the infinite chose to express as Destiny Muhammad. And so that is honoring that. When it speaks as me, I don't edit it or go, well, it was trying to say, no, it said what it said.
Yeah. So what was downloaded into your spirit?
What was downloaded into my spirit is exactly the way it was supposed to come out.
Yeah, yeah. That's why I want you on here. You're so enlightening. And like I said, you just bring such a great energy that we need, you know, right now. I want to play some music from your recent album, the Destiny Muhammad Trio, Volume 2. And I have seen you all perform live, and you all are amazing and fabulous. Yeah.
Leon Joyce Jr. on drums and percussions, Chico Lopez on upright bass, and my wonderful husband, Chriswell Muhammad, holding a high watch around us, making sure that we're all segmented and ready to go. It is a magical blessing.
And people listening, if you ever get a chance to see them live, do it. Do it, because they are so good.
Thank you.
They are so good. Thank and so you. This album, it's a blend of original music and cover songs.
Absolutely. So we received a beautiful blessing from Chamber Music America in conjunction with the Doris Duke Foundation. It was a grant that allowed women in jazz to have a mentor.
Nice.
And so, right? And so the mentor would talk us through music. And so we chose a series of jazz compositions from wonderful artists that we love, and decided that we would go ahead and make an album with those compositions that we really enjoyed. And in the same breath, we had an original composition that I had received from a commission from the San Jose Jazz Festival. Mm-hmm. And we put that on there as well to thank the San Jose Jazz Festival. And also, because why not put one of your originals and say, you know what? You said, we love your music and we love ours too. So we put it in there in the mix just to show a parallel and possibility.
Yeah, because Destiny is a composer, and her original music is gorgeous. So, and that song that you dedicated to San Jose Jazz Festival, that's the Path of the Sun, right?
Path of the Sun.
Okay, so let's hear some of that.
Path of the Sun.
Right, if you're just joining us, I'm speaking with harpist Destiny Muhammad. Her latest album is the Destiny Muhammad Trio, Volume 2, and it has beautiful original works like what you just heard right now, which was Path of the Sun. And it also has some great covers of some great jazz songs, and Destiny's here with me in studio. How long have you all, again, like I said, I've seen you play, the trio play, and again, shout out to Leon Joyce Jr., again, on drums and percussion, and Arthur Chico Lopez, who plays the bass. And your music ranges from, you all said, Celtic to Coltrane.
Yes. Yes.
Celtic, you don't hear that often.
Well, when I first started playing, I started learning Celtic jigs and reels when I very started. So we've got a couple of, at least one Celtic composition on the Volume 1 that's called the Butterfly Jig, and it's beautiful history of coming off of Ireland into the United States, starting out initially as the Widow's Jig, but came to the United States when folks were migrating after the potato famine.
Ah, okay.
And so when it came to the United States, the feeling of hope was the butterfly, the transformation. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so we have the Butterfly Jig on Volume 1.
Okay. Okay. And Volume 1 also, too, is good, too, as well. Mm-hmm. So I just want to let people know that. And forgive me, I said Celtic is Celtic. My apologies.
No worries.
So how did y'all come together, the trio?
Ooh, met Leon at a jam session at the Jazz Heritage Center that was down off of the Fillmore. Mm-hmm. And he said, well, if you're ever doing something, let me know. And that was like about 10, 12 years ago. And then we would get this day to do at the Fort Mason with Devorah Major. She had written this, she had written this play and wanted live music. And I said, oh, the player that we had, the bass player we had, got called away to go to Europe. And I said, well, I can't be mad, but I, we got this work to do.
Yeah.
So I asked Leon, I said, do you know somebody? Because generally what I've learned is that if the drummer has a bass player that he enjoys the work with, there's a lock. And so he said, you know, I just started playing with this youngster by the name of Chico Lopez. I said, well, bring him on. We got to write a bunch of original compositions for this play. And Chico stuck. So Chico.
Okay, Chico.
Chico's been with us, and he is just a real powerhouse, and all of us are growing in our sound together.
Nice.
We are, sometimes there are things that are very intuitive with us.
Yeah.
And I love that.
Ah, oh, that's nice. That's beautiful. Yes, I mean, I can hear it in the music. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can hear it in the music. So you mentioned Fort Mason.
Mm-hmm.
What you got going on at Fort Mason?
Girl, I got a call from Fort Mason to, it's me, George Brooks on saxophone,
nice,
and Dylan Vito on vibes. And we've been invited to play for this installation that's going to kick off on February the 1st,
okay,
3 o'clock p.m. And the installation is dark with just a little bit of light coming through it. And so we are going to be playing off of one another in the dark, improvisation.
Mm. What?
Yes.
Wow.
So we're all in three different places, and we can hear one another. So we're going to be literally playing off of what we hear. It's like a call and response, possible duet, and then silence.
Wow. Who's hosting this, or who is?
Fort Mason is hosting it. I apologize. Let me not be so bad and not have up the, oh, my God. It is a.
Is it? Well, we can. What we can do is after the show.
Sure.
Yeah, we can post a link on the KLW.org Sights and Sounds page,
yes,
for people to know where to find out about this. Because you said within 24 hours after it was announced, it's almost sold out.
Almost sold out. I mean, literally just went through a walkthrough of the venue just now, and they said, 24 hours we posted it, and folks just said, wow, that we got to go.
Well, you know, let's do this. While Destiny's trying to find some information for our listeners.
Anthony McCall. It's called First Light.
Okay.
Anthony McCall, First Light. It is the fortmason.org. You want to go to their website. They're also on Facebook. Anthony McCall's First Light. This is his exhibit, and it is an incredible. It's dark with light coming through, but your eyes must get attuned to the darkness to see the light.
To see the light. So much like life, huh?
Honey.
So much like life.
You better say that two times.
Yeah. Do you know Mia Pixley, the cellist?
Yeah. I want to know her. Okay. I've been noticing her work for ages.
Yeah, I've interviewed her, and she has a song, her album is called Love Dark Bloom, and she talks about the beauty of darkness.
Ooh.
And there's a line that I've been saying where she says, all hearts beat in the dark.
Word.
Yeah. So when you said what you were doing, I was thinking about what she said.
Yes.
But let's listen. I want to play another song, or a snippet of another song.
Mm-hmm.
So here's something about John Coltrane, which is by Alice Coltrane.
Yes.
And so let's listen to the Destiny Muhammad Trio's cover of that song.
Thank you.
All right. That was the Destiny Muhammad Trio's cover of Something About John Coltrane, which was originally by the late Alice Coltrane. Mm. Yes. Both of those artists, amazing. And I saw this son perform recently at SF Jazz with Carlos Santana. I said, we are so lucky in the Bay Area. We are so lucky in the Bay Area with some of the art that we get, you know.
For real.
Yes, yes. Now, I know you perform a lot here, but you are giving Detroit.
Girl.
Some Destiny Muhammad vibes. I have to ask about this. We got about 4 minutes left. 45 minutes.
Okay, I'm trying to keep.
Don't rush too much because we got about 4 to 5 minutes. So you and your bandmates, the Destiny Muhammad Trio,
yes,
are doing something I wish I could attend. It's called Detroit Red.
Yes,
It's a project about the significant role that Black Muslims played in the development and growth of jazz.
Yes,
Detroit Red was Malcolm X's nickname.
Yo.
And I know he lived in Michigan when he was young, in his youth. He did some hustling in Detroit. That was his nickname, Detroit Red, because he was a hustler. And he was from Michigan. Okay, so I want to know more about this, because we do not have these conversations about Black Muslims and their influence in jazz. And Malcolm X loved jazz.
Malcolm X loved jazz, and that has not always been talked about, because we've talked about Malcolm X and his fight for social justice with a focus in on Black folks. Malcolm X had a letter that he wrote to Sonny Stitt, a 4-page letter. And on the 4th page, he tells Sonny about the lordly musician, the power of music and jazz. And he's talking about it in that 4th page. And that life without music is like life without Allah.
Wow.
This is Malcolm X talking about that. And the jazz artist who loved him. February 14th, 1965. Ford Auditorium in Detroit, Michigan. The Afro-American broadcasters invited Malcolm X to come and to give his speech. Malcolm X loved jazz so much, they had two jazz trios open up for him. The Donald Byrd Trio and the Dorothy Ashby Trio. Dorothy Ashby was a fabulous jazz harpist with her own trio hailing from Detroit, Michigan. Mm. These two opened up for him on what would have actually been his last speech at the Ford Auditorium.
Wow.
And so this group that I am blessed to play with, Lou Fuki, Ishmael, oh my gosh, Tazeen Ayoub, a spoken word artist, her name is Tazleem, and an array of wonderful percussionists to come forward with my trio, Leon Joyce Jr. and Chico Lopez. We are not necessarily going to reenact that, but we are going to, through the music, talk about Malcolm's love for jazz.
Okay.
And what folks also don't know is that Malcolm was also a great Lindy Hopper at that time.
Really?
Yes. So some of the music will allude to that. We have a dancer who is an imam, Imam Kafani, mm-hmm. who's a fabulous dancer, who will also reenact a portion of that, evoking the energy of Malcolm X.
Wow.
Sister Dr. Tazleem, who just got her doctorate, anthropology, sociology, I could go forward. Mm-hmm. She has written some beautiful poetry that's going to speak to the essence of El Malik Shabazz. Yes. Malcolm X. And so coming from the Muslim perspective and also the interfaith perspective of both the Muslim, Christian, Sufi experience that will speak on the music of him and also speak on the music, and it's coming out of Detroit. Detroit has its own incredible energy.
I went to Detroit a couple years ago and just visited, and I went for the Black Women's Rock, because Black Women's Rock is all Black women rock musicians. And so they did one here in the Bay Area before the pandemic, and they had their 20th anniversary, and I said I had to go.
Was Nona Hendrix on that?
Yes, Nona Hendrix is Nona Hendrix.
Yes.
Fire. She is fire in her 80s. She is fire in her 80s. And we got 1 minute to wrap up. But yes, so I went to Detroit and just walked around and talked to people. Detroit and Oakland, when I told people I was from Oakland, they were like, well, you are like a cousin, basically. But you see the similarities, but the energy there and the music and the culture and the history, you know, just with Motown. But and it's so much more. It's more. Wow. Are you going to be able to bring some of that to the Bay?
We are working on bringing it to the Bay. But right now, for any of y'all in Detroit, it's going to be February the 8th at the Gretchen Villard Jazz Center in Detroit, Michigan. Okay. 2 o'clock. There are tickets online. Go to Destiny Muhammad and get and DestinyMuhammad.net. I have it on my website as well as Lou Fuki, who is also on Facebook, IG. The tickets are available. The tickets are free. A donation.
Oh, nice.
And we want to give a big shout out to Dream of Detroit, who stepped forward and made it possible along with Pillars.
Well, you know, and if folks know people from Detroit, you know, or in the Michigan area that may want to come, then relay that information. Destiny, it's been a pleasure. Always is.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. All right. Destiny Muhammad's latest album is the Destiny Muhammad Trio, Volume 2. And you can stream it on your favorite music platform or buy it on Bandcamp.com and follow her at DestinyMuhammad.net. That's all the time we have for the Sights and Sounds show. Thank you to our show producer, Porfirio Rango, board operator, Damian Miner, and our director of audio programming, David Boyer. And thank you for tuning in. Tomorrow night, Thursday, make sure you go to Books, Inc. and Alameda. I'll be talking to James Cagney about his book, Ghetto Koans. And again, that's tomorrow night, 7 p.m. Go to klw.org/events for details. Don't miss this great conversation. And we'll have another great show for you right here next Wednesday at 4 p.m. Until then, be good to yourselves and each other. And Destiny and I are taking a selfie while I'm on the air.